This is Radical Love Life, an ongoing series of podcasts and special events where we explore faith outside the boxes. Hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. So, hey, Kelly.
Hey, Mark.
How you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How you doing today?
I am freaking awesome, as always.
Awesome, awesome. Well, what are we going to talk about today?
Well, so, Kelly, my friend, we are going to do what I call in my own head the Kelly and Mark Show. And so this week on this episode, we are going to talk about the things that are resonating with each of us. And there's plenty of things that I think we can cover in this episode. So I'm going to tee it right up with the first one, and that's taking a look at what's going on in the Middle East, you know, with Israel and Gaza and the hurt and so much suffering that we see. And I'd like us to actually maybe do it a little different. Because, you know, this is very complex, given, you know, all of the, just all of the threads that go to the situation there. So
very long history, lots of complexity. And
yeah.
And a lot of information that I know that I don't have about the situation.
I would agree. I'm not equipped to discern on that, at least in a public way. I have my thoughts. But so instead, how about we frame this in the context of what does this do to spirituality throughout the world when folks see conflict like this and the divisiveness? So how about we go that route?
Right. That makes sense, because I mean we're talking about a conflict that is, you know, that's over land, it's over, you know, political standing, but it is also, there's a religious element at the heart of it. And a lot of people's opinions and reactions are religiously based. And it's a time when people could, particularly from outside religious beliefs, but also within religious organizations, can look at it and go like, this is what religion does in the world. Look, everybody.
Yeah, that's so true. Do you have a little bit more that you want to tease out on that?
Sure. I've been looking at a couple of, reactions online. There's so much stuff out there that there are so many people that feel a need to make pronouncements and,
yes.
And without necessarily having all the information, and also not necessarily letting us just kind of react and grieve what's going on and sort of react.
Okay, so that's a really great observation. And yes, we'll get to you sharing some of those observations. I was part of a meditation group last evening, one that I regularly participate. And one of the folks shared, we talked about the suffering that is going on, but it's not just there. There's other places in the world. And this happens all the time. Like, this is the reality. It's not that that we see it and it'll pop up and it becomes very pronounced in this case, like what's going on in Israel, Gaza. But of course, there's a Ukraine, and that might even have some religious elements to it as well. In fact, it does. At least with churches that are playing into it, or other parts of the world, or what happened in Myanmar, you know, some years ago with the Rohingyas. I mean, there's so much and tying to that. And I know we'll get there. My point is, as much sorrow and hurt, we have to grieve and honor that process. You can't just start dialing in the facts or trying to grab at them. There's an emotional reaction and processing that we must go through and observe it at the human level, right, to understand that. And then I'll go one further with that. In all of that sorrow, though, there's also, we still have a responsibility to celebrate joy. And that's what we were doing last night in our meditation group and our sharing that, you know, and it really came to me for the first time that, you know, it's the yin and yang. There's always the balance. You know, there's always going to be sorrow in the world, but there's also going to be joy in the world. And we celebrate that even regardless with all of the sorrow, we still must celebrate our humanity, our divinity as well. So maybe a little bit off that, but I just thought I'd share, my response to your observation about the grieving.
So. Yeah, it's interesting. It's I'm actually going to follow that thread for a little bit before we come back.
Go for it.
It's something that I've been working on with both my therapist and with my personal meditation practice.
Yeah,
is that it's really easy in a world of crisis, and there's crisis everywhere. There's climate crisis. There's epidemics. There's war. And then we have personal crises that, you know, that that affect us every day, to wake up in the morning and go, everything is terrible. I've got to start solving problems right away, et cetera. Yeah. But, you know, I've been trying to end every day. And I've been actually using the Ignatian practice of the examine, which is to reflect back on the day. And for anybody who wants to look that up, it's E-X-A-M-E-N. The Latin, but it starts off with finding something in the last 24 hours to be grateful about. And it could be just a moment. It doesn't have to be, you know, even if things are going bad, it could be just a moment. You know, I had that moment to breathe between meetings, or there was a moment where my child smiled at me and we had a laugh together, and that was, or I looked out the window and I saw the leaves falling off the tree because it's autumn. And then going from there, from that spot, because it really like opens up the heart to start with like something to be grateful about, then think about the problems. So addressing it from that standpoint, and then say, now where are the parts where I felt separate from the divine? Where are the parts where I felt the least open to love? Where are the parts where I can learn from? Where are the parts that I can ask forgiveness for? And then go from there to prepare for the next day. And what it does is it makes the next day start, you know, I find myself deliberately looking for things to be grateful about, because I know I'm going to talk about them with myself tonight. And it's just an interesting kind of shift in mindset. And it's not to be really too Pollyanna. It's not to say, I'm grateful about everything in the world and there's nothing, you know, there's real problems in the world, and they require more than just praying about them.
Oh, absolutely. You're talking about the toxic positivity and bypassing, where you just like, oh, no, there's no bad in this world. Everything's great. And it's like, no, that's not the case. Or you could flip it and say, you know, there's no good in this world. There's only bad in this world. Well, no, that's not true either.
Right. Yeah. There's a point where in order to make it through the next day, that there's some reason to be here, even if it's just to, you know, to do good and to try to shift the tide.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm glad we went down this tangent.
So
to the topic we introduced here, we are discussing, you know, what's going on currently in Israel and Gaza, and the impact on what we think might be happening with, or asking the question, what's happening with people's spirituality when they see this kind of conflict. So you were going to share some observations, so go for it.
Right, right. Well, and I've seen a lot of posts from people who I know are typically critical of religion, who say, you know, this is what happens. Religion fuels all wars, et cetera.
Yeah.
But also some people who are more publicly spiritual have talked about how we're reacting to this. And here's one from our friend, Alicia Crosby Mack, who just recently, she spoke at the Evolving Faith conference.
I saw her and I got to give her a big hug as well. Just a, in a brief moment of seeing Alicia. I love her. So,
And she's always great at speaking the truth in a moment where people are taking sides and trying to be very polarized.
Yeah.
She says, I wonder how many of us are choking on grief and bile as violences we were never meant to swallow play out in Israel and Gaza, then on the internet streets. Some of us see a dehumanizing spectrum of performance as people turn catastrophe into content and currency, not meaningful solidarity. So responding to, you know, public figures who are making these pronouncements, and then other people that are reacting to them, and it dehumanizes the whole thing. It makes it a commodity, and it makes it it's like we forget that we're talking about real human beings who are hurting and dying, and so many innocent people that aren't part of the government. They're not part of the religious establishment. We're just trying to live their lives.
I love that. Thank you. And, you know, typical of Alicia, she has this brilliant perspective, and God love her for sharing that. You just used a word that is near and dear to me, because I just finished listening to an audiobook. It's in print form as well. It's written by David Livingston Smith, Livingstone, actually, Livingstone, last name Smith. And his most recent book is called On Humanity, and the subtitle is Dehumanization and How to Resist It. Folks, I recommend that you listen to it or read it. It's an easy, quick book. And he, I'll just read the synopsis. It takes an unflinching look at the mechanisms of the mind that encourage us to see someone less than human. There's something peculiar and horrifying in human psychology that makes us vulnerable to thinking whole groups of people as subhuman creatures. When governments or other groups stand to gain by exploiting this innate propensity and know just how to manipulate words and images to trigger it, there is no limit to the violence and hatred that can result. How timely to that. And I started this about 2 weeks ago, and I just finished it just as things were happening in Gaza and Israel. And that word you just used, we're not here to do a review of David's book here, but his point is how we dehumanize. This is just something that is ingrained to us, and that it's an instinct that we need to learn how to cope with. And this, and what is going on in Gaza, in Israel, is a very easy case to dehumanize on any side of the issues that are inside of that, right? We cannot forget about that, right? And to make gain off of it, as Alicia was saying in that quote, it is amazing how people will take something like that and monetize it or make it as their pitch point to conversation. Even as I'm saying this, I'm realizing we're having this conversation about it. I just hope we're coming at it in an honorable, truthful way, you know, in this conversation, because it is about the humans, regardless of how you feel, who's right, who's wrong, if there's such a thing in that situation. It's humans. Like, that's what this is all about. We see this.
Right. It would take a bigger picture look at it. And, you know, and I do hope that as we go through this, that it's clear that we're not taking a side. We're not making a political statement. We're just reacting to this rift in our world. And, you know, I've noticed that it's easy to dehumanize people who are seen as the, you know, historically as the enemy, you know, whatever, you know, whoever, whatever side people are on, they've been thinking about the enemy. But I've even seen, you know, within like the church, the church environment that I grew up in, with the kind of look at prophecy and apocalypse and stuff like that, that even people who are looking at the good guys, their version of the good guys, are dehumanizing them in a way, because they become pawns in this kind of apocalyptic scenario without actually thinking about, like, what, you know, they're not involved in the day-to-day business of those people. They're thinking about them as kind of more symbolic.
Well, as you said, pawns. They're pawns to carry out the mission. They're on the last roll, and while the pawns are in front of them, and they're doing the deeds to get them to what their ultimate goal is. And there is plenty of Zionism that does take place, you know. And again, that could be a topic in of itself, because they're certainly in there. But they look at what's going on there, and that yes,
right. There are people who are like cheering on the sidelines of a football game. That is, itself is dehumanizing.
Oh my God, is it ever? Yeah. Wow. Okay. What other observations do you have to share Was there another one?
Yeah, there was another one here, speaking of actually football game.
Yeah.
And this is from a minister friend of ours, and it's not a public post, so I'm not going to name them.
Okay.
But it's the quote is really striking to me. Religion is a professional degree that those of us who received academic training desire to help serve and educate our communities. Being a pastor, rabbi, imam, or clergy is a profession. Due to really bad theology or wars in which we see warped views of religion, sometimes people make statements like, religion is bad, which is an inaccurate statement. Religion, whether we adhere to practices or not, is deeply part of all cultures of the world. Those of us who have studied graduate level work don't assume we know it all, or if we do, be careful of those ones. So when our world experiences a war with religious beliefs intertwined, it is ignorant to bash religion as a whole. Critique bad theology, challenge harmful theology, retire bad theology, yes. But religion is part of who we are as cultures. Religion is not an NFL team to root for to win. Promote peace without dehumanizing individuals and religious convictions.
Yep. Yeah. That's so true.
And you should let that one soak in for a little bit. Yeah. There's a lot of material there.
It is. I, you know, and yes, out of respect to that individual, you know, it's not a public post. So, folks, I guess you'll just have to rewind this part of that episode if you want to hear what Kelly just shared there. But I love his take. You know, it's so easy to conflict. We, especially in our culture now, that's, you know, we're just, we will make these snap decisions based on what is presented to us, and we've been trained to that. And I'm gonna say something that was interesting. I was waiting for a bus last night, and I was watching this. She was a Zoomer. I mean, she was in her 20s, mm-hmm. and I'm watching her on her phone. Just observing. She does not know that I'm not stalking her. I'm just watching, observing, and she was scrolling through TikTok, and. Oh my God, I was like, I don't know how she was comprehending anything because the speed to which she was doing it, she was just going from one thing to another, but yet she was like absorbed into it. And my point in that is that our culture is so trained to do that because if we do that and we think in that binary and train our minds and good, bad, yet this is interest or no, this isn't, and move on, you know, it's like the swipe left, swipe right, of matching services, same thing, you know, do you like this person? Do you not like this person? All in that. So to where I'm trying to circle back is to this individual and sharing that religion is bad. To do that, to drive that down in that, just it's so harmful. Because yes, that's how I feel. Religion has been around us humans for, you know, lots and lots and lots and lots of eons, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever. And it's not going to go away anytime soon. You know, yes, of course, you know, there's the famous Time magazine, you know, that said, is God dead? Well, yeah, I guess God can be dead in certain frameworks because, you know, that's part of the evolution of faith, right, and spirituality. It's going to grow and adapt, even though people don't want it to. Some people don't want it to, of course. The mm-hmm. fact is it is. But is all religion bad? No. And, you know, there's even an article I think you mentioned where somebody was talking about trying to connect, you know, one's religion or faith to their overall well-being.
Yeah, yeah. There's this, it's a Gallup poll. And this is, it's interesting because we've looked at other polls recently that are about how church attendance is shrinking and how religious affiliation is shrinking and that group of nuns, the N-O-N-E-S, mm-hmm. is growing. I think it's now up to like 35% of Americans report no religious affiliation.
Yeah, do you want to dive into that? And because I know I'm kind of dragging us off into a point, but you did want to mention that one particular piece because it was going to connect to, you know, what's the impact of strife and drama around religion, and does that drive up the nuns? Did that come out in that poll at all? I mean, how did they tease out that number?
Yeah, well. A lot of the if you're talking about the reasons behind.
Yeah. Why are people nuns?
Nuns. A lot of it has to do with political hypocrisy.
Oh, well, there you are.
And, you know, not seeing the religious institutions lining up with what they're preaching. There was one of the things that was about how they handled money, that there was a lot of mistrust about organizations, tax-free organizations, asking for money and wanting to know where it went and why the pastor drives a fancy car. And
you mean like that one preacher, pastor out in Brooklyn that got robbed last year, who also drives a Bentley SUV?
I remember that story. He got robbed during the service.
Yeah, during the service. Yeah. You know, I guess he was doing well for himself. So, amen.
Another main reason for people not being affiliated with being religiously affiliated with these institutions is inclusivity, particularly around LGBTQ, and other, you know, sometimes it's just the racial division in churches as well.
Yeah, we can't underestimate that. Still, I mean, yeah, it's still there.
Sunday morning is still the most segregated hour of the week.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Powerful observation. That's true. Yeah, very good point. Well, thank you for sharing that. What else did you have on the nuns?
Well, in this is a different Gallup report.
Okay.
That's about really whether religion is good, whether religion has a positive effect.
Okay.
So it's a new report from Gallup finds that religious people around the world report being more positive, have more social support, and are more involved in their communities than those who are not religious.
Okay, now that is an interesting... I'm processing, because it almost feels a little contradictory to where somebody who is not religious go, I don't feel that. I don't see how that could be possible because, you know, for those that... of a particular religion who is very concrete on their faith, shall we say, right? That they are not flexible. Do they find joy in that, in their inflexibility, or, you know?
This is, according to this data, it's 10 years worth of data, that they found that on a number of well-being measures, the people who are religious, and this is all self-reported, you know,
good point,
have better well-being than people who are not. And some of the measures are, the respondents were asked questions such as, did you smile or laugh today?
Oof.
Were you treated with respect? They asked questions about whether they gave to charity or helped a stranger. They were asked about their physical health. They're asked about health and infrastructure. So it's the results, and there's a table here. Maybe we can link to it in our description. Is about you know, people within religious experiences having positive experiences, having a positive social life, having optimism, that they have a higher... they scored higher than people who don't report being part of a religion.
Okay. So I'm processing and thinking through my own experiences. How does that resonate and does that connect with my experience? And I'm going to say, I suppose so. So.
Well, you know, at the same time, you know, that's the thing is we've talked to so many people who have had the opposite experience, who've been traumatized by religion, who have felt left out of religion. And so I guess, you know, it begs the question of, is, you know, if you have values that align with that religion, then it's probably a great club to be in. And if not, then maybe not.
I think you're onto something, and you used a good word for that club, which, you know, some people might not like that connection, but okay, fine, call it what it is, whatever works for you. But having that community, how about we use that word?
When people do thrive in community, whether it's whether it's religion or,
oh, totally.
You know, we all go to the same nightclub or, you know, we, there are different ways to have community.
Oh, absolutely. So, but in a religious community, if you connect and resonate with your fellow community members, then are you going to derive positive or well-being out of that? I suppose, unless it's a highly toxic circumstance, which that's in of itself a different issue. But yeah, I could see that, because if I look at what I was for many years, I was an angry atheist. I hated religion, right? So I didn't want to have anything to do with it because I thought all of it was just pure BS and harmful, and because of what had happened to me and the trauma I endured as a kid. So I had that bias. Now here I am 12 years later and on a much different, plane of spirituality and faith. And yes, I am a part of communities. In fact, I'm a part of several faith communities, all of which there's ones more traditional, but several are way out there as well. You know, it's a loose gathering of fellow seekers and people that are out in wilderness by design, as I like to say. So I do enjoy that. So yeah, I guess, yes. Is it good for me? Yeah, because I see the world differently. I had to resolve and reconcile what happened to me, and I'm still going through that process. But, you know, through that, that allowed me to open the door to come back in, mm-hmm. To some form of spirituality. And I've created my own framework of faith and those things that work for me and how I see the creative force and all of that. That works for me. Yes, I think it is good for me.
You know, one analogy that comes to mind is, a lot of the copywriting work that I've done in advertising has been in healthcare.
Yeah.
And sometimes a drug will come along because drugs have drugs work differently in each individual. Not everybody realizes that it's. There's a lot of individuality, which is why in some categories, like in mental health, where a doctor will have to use 5 or 6 different medications at different times to see what works with what patient because they have different chemistry.
Okay, that's a good lesson right there because I don't think that way, right?
The same thing with, like in cancer treatments, they'll sure. use, 5 or 6 different things until something works. But sometimes what happens is a drug will either, will not work in a patient or will be, just not work that well. But when it does work, it does gangbusters. Mm. And I wonder if this is one of those situations where, like, if religion works for you, it really works.
Mm.
Whereas if it doesn't work for you, then maybe it's not your thing.
You are filled with some really great observations today.
I'm just... trying to make sense of this picture because I don't want to make it sound like we're saying is that you have to have religion to be happy, because you don't.
No, absolutely.
There are lots
no.
of there
let's
are lots
be really
of
clear about that. Yes,
totally authentic. Yeah. That don't don't see reason to have religion and have thriving lives. But yes. What we're also saying is that religion isn't just this evil thing that creates destruction and war and conflict.
It can serve good as well.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And we're not even speaking about any specific religion as well.
Oh,
by the way,
no.
This is a pool of different religious views.
Yeah, we're not here to represent any of those. Wow, I love how we brought this full circle back to the original question of how do we look at, what is the impact of Israel on Gaza and the suffering we see, what does that do to global religiosity or, somebody's faith and how they have to reconcile to all of that. So hopefully this conversation is, peeled back a little bit for folks that listen to this episode to maybe think through some of the observations and that we've discussed here today.
Yeah, and maybe to pause the rapid temptation to pick a side or say, well, they deserve that and they didn't deserve that. and this deserves to happen to this side or that side, but step back and be like, these are all humans. And depending on your faith, you know, based on my faith tradition, they're all humans created in the image of God.
Yeah.
Who are deserving of respect and dignity. There are also some evil actors in there. I'm not going to
sugarcoat it.
Yeah, but it's not like not everybody's doing good.
Right.
But there are a lot of victims.
Yeah.
Who've done nothing. And I do think that they deserve our grief and compassion.
Yeah. Wow. I think we can leave it right there at this point. So folks, I hope you enjoyed our conversation about this. And remember that you can always find other episodes out there, you know, that we've recorded in the past. And of course, you know, we like to publish on a weekly basis. So we have some fun episodes coming up with some key guests. So stay tuned. So Kelly, thank you very much for your time. I always enjoy our conversations.
Me too. This was a great kind of meandering journey together.
Sure was.
But I like where we ended up.
Indeed. All right, everybody, be well and peace to y'all.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Radical Love Live, co-hosted by Mark Dilcom and Kelly Wilson. All rights reserved. You can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, and other popular podcast platforms. Go to RadicalLoveLive.com to learn more about us, watch recordings of our live events, and listen to our podcast. We also invite you to check out what Kelly and Mark are doing by going to our websites. Find Kelly at KellyWilson.com and Mark at MarkDilcom.com. This is Radical Love Live, where we explore faith outside the boxes.